Okay, so we're learning Perek Tes of Sefer Shoftim. At the end of Perek Ches, we'll see. at the end of Perek Ches, we spoke about Gideon's death. After all that Gideon accomplished, defeating the Midianim and the Amalekim and the Bnei Kedem, and restoring Bnei Yisrael to their position. At the end of Perek Tes, we discussed Gideon's children. If you remember, we discussed the fact that Gideon had a lot of time on his hands. Things were quiet. So he had 70 children. The Pasuk tells us in Perek Ches Pasuk Lamed that he had 70 children. He had many wives that he was married to, so he had 70 children. That was Pasuk Lamed in Perek Ches. And then a Pasuk Lamed Aleph, which is very important for this Perek, in Pasuk Lamed Aleph in Perek Ches, we learned that he also had a Pilegesh. He had a concubine. And with that Pilegesh in Shechem, he had another son. And that son's name was Avimelech. Now, at the time you're learning Perek Ches, it's not clear why that's important, right? Why is that important information? But we'll see that it's actually very important for this Perek Ches. Perek Ches begins with Pasuk Aleph, Vayelech Avimelech ben Yerubal Shechema. Avimelech, the son of Yerubal. Yerubal, we know, is another name for Gideon. So Avimelech, the son of Gideon, son of Yerubal, comes to Shechem, El Achei Imo. So he was from Shechem. His mother was from Shechem, the concubine, right? The Pilegesh was from Shechem. So he apparently had moved out. I guess he grew up and he moved out of Shechem. And now he's coming back to Shechem to talk to his uncles, to talk to his mother's family. And he begins by talking to them, to his uncles, his mother's brothers, and his entire mother's family as follows. And this is what he says to them. Pasuk Beis. Dabru na be'oznei cholba le'shechem. I would like you, my family, to speak to the city of Shechem, to all of the inhabitants of Shechem, on my behalf. Matov lachem hamshol ba. What's better for you, right? You, the people of Shechem. What's better for you? Hamshol bachem shivim ish kol bnei Yerubal. Is it better for all 70 of Yerubal's sons, of Gideon's sons, to rule over you, or im meshol bachem ish echad? Or is it better for one person to rule over you? Uzchartem, and remember, ki atzmechem uvesarchem ani. Remember that I'm one of you. We're mishpacha. We're family. Okay? So what's he saying? So essentially what's happening here is that there's a vacuum of leadership. Gideon was the leader. He was the Jewish leader. He was the shofet, the king, for whatever that's worth. Gideon passes away. No clear succession as to who's supposed to lead after him. If you remember, at the end of Perek Ches, Gideon said, don't worry about it, just worship Hashem, right? Because they asked him in Perek Ches, we want you to lead us, we want your sons and your grandsons to lead us. And Gideon said, please, don't worry about it, just worship Hashem. Right? Remember, we discussed it, just worship Hashem. He put all the focus on Hashem. Problem is that the people wanted a leader, right? People wanted a leader, and now there's no leadership. So this son, this Avimelech, is coming to now the people of Shechem, coming to his family in Shechem. And they're saying, listen, how are you going to choose the next leader? How are you going to choose the successor for Gideon? Gideon has 70 sons. Which of the 70 sons is going to be more fitting to be the leader than the others? How are you going to choose one out of the 70? So if you want to choose one of his sons, you got to choose all 70. That means you're going to have 70 kings, which is obviously preposterous, right?
Isn't this like a big contrast to what Gideon did originally? He didn't want even to be the leader or anything.
Correct. Well, we'll see that this son is going to be he's not up to any good, this one, you know, but he's not doing this for he wants the power, right? He wants the power. He's not doing this because he feels like he's doing it for the good of Klal Yisrael, right? He wants the power. So instead, he's saying that I want instead of appointing these 70 sons to be the leader, because how are you going to choose from the 70? Instead, choose me. I'm the only different one. Right? How was he different? He was from a concubine. He was from a Pilegesh. Right? So he was different. He was different than the other sons. The other ones were all the regular wives and the 70 sons. That's all one group. He says, I'm different. So choose me. Right? That's easy to select. that's the argument that he comes. He feels that it'll be better for the people. Right? That's the language that he uses. Says the Malbim, if you look at his language, Matov Lachem. Right? He's putting it, he's spinning it that what's better for you. I'm always in this, you know, everybody who's power hungry, right? They can't say, I'm power hungry. I want the kingship. Please appoint me. So instead, what do? They spin it. No, it's better for you. It's better for you if I'm the king. Because if I'm not the king, how are you going to choose among the 70? Right? You know, and he's saying, number one, it's better for you. And it's also better for you because I'm your relative. Right? So if you appoint me, you have protexia. You have protexia in the palace. Yeah.
Does he have permission or from his brothers?
Definitely not. Definitely not. We'll see in a minute that they didn't really get along. Right? Definitely no permission. He's doing this on his own. He's trying to just, you know, just push his way into power here. I'm sorry?
He's a politician, but he has no...
No, he doesn't want permission. He's coming on his own. That's right.
His cousins.
No, brothers. Half-brothers, yeah. No, he's coming on his own. Now, by the way, I mean, we've seen this just throughout Jewish history. Very often, when there is a vacuum of leadership, there are problems. Yeah. Right? Very often, when there's a vacuum of leadership, there are problems. And again, and maybe this was a chisaron Gidon, because again, at the end of last parak, and they said to him, we want you to rule over us, we want your son and your grandson. And Gidon kind of said, he downplayed the whole thing. But remember, Gidon was not a natural leader, right? He was a shepherd. He wasn't, you know, he was helping his father in the, not a shepherd, I'm sorry, he was helping his father in the threshing floor. He was a farmer. You know, he wasn't really a leader. He ended up being a good general and was able to scare the Midianite camp and was able to kill the generals at the end. So he was a mighty warrior in the end. That he proved himself to be. But he wasn't a natural leader. And maybe he didn't understand the fact that the Jewish people needed a leader at this time. And we see he died and everybody just went back to doing their Avodah Zarah. That's what happened, right? And we find this throughout history that whenever there's a lack of clarity in terms of who should take over next, it leads to machlokes, it leads to disarray, right? We've seen that countless times throughout Jewish history. You know, many times, you know, in different Hasidic courts, right, where you have where it's not clear who the next rebbe is going to be, and all of a sudden you have, well, within one Hasidus, now you have this Hasidus, this branch, and that branch, and the other branch, because you know there wasn't clear direction as to who the next rebbe should be. You know, I remember reading I read a biography of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. You know, by Joseph Telushkin, very interesting biography. I mean, there are many biographies about him, but I read that particular one. And it was fascinating because, you know, there was a little bit of a dispute as to who should be the leader, who should be the Rebbe, after the previous Rebbe died. And it was either between, you know, the one that did end up serving him, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, or his brother-in-law. And there was a lot of confusion, and he at first kind of, you know, didn't take it. You know, he didn't want to step on his brother-in-law's toes, and he didn't take it, and at the end there was a little bit of confusion who should be the Rebbe, and the people ended up deciding. There wasn't an election, I don't think, but it was kind of like a movement, you know, to appoint him to be the Rebbe, and then he was accepted by all of Chabad, and he became the unanimous Rebbe, and you know, but then again, you know, he passed away, and then there was no leader. You know, there was no leader, and then you know we have you know, even today different factions within Chabad, and whatever different Hasiduses, you have different factions and machlokas. They don't get along, you know, above of this and above of that, and satmar this and satmar that, and you know, and it's unfortunate because sometimes when you have clear direction, things go much smoother. And I can't think of any better example of this than in the Torah itself, because the greatest leader the Jewish people ever had was Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu died. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't wait for confusion. During Moshe Rabbeinu's life, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, appoint Yehoshua ben Nun, and he said, I want the people to see you appointing him as the next leader. I want people to see that. Why? Because if people trust you, and they see you, you know, giving him the smicha, and informing him that he's going to take over, that's going to give them the confidence in Yehoshua. And Baruch Hashem, the people during Yehoshua, you know, you always have a couple of hiccups here and there, but by and large, during the time of Yehoshua, things were good. You know, Yehoshua took them into Eretz Yisrael, and he conquered, and there was, you know, we don't hear much about Avodah Zarah, you know, until after Yehoshua's death, and then his kingdom, and then, you know, and then things begin to unravel a little bit. But that succession of leadership, and perhaps the Kodesh Baruch Hu was teaching us a message with that, you know, with that transmission of leadership in the Torah, that this is how it has to be done. If you want things to be smooth, you want the transitions to go well. You don't want people unraveling. You don't want communities, getting into different factions and machlokas. Then things have to be clear. Things have to be, you know, clearly handed down from one leader to the next, and even in the previous leader's lifetime, you know, to make him like a vice leader, you know, the vice president, you know, to the president in training, you know, whatever the case might be. It's an important thing. Yeah.
When Moshe Rabbeinu died.
Exactly.
There was no question.
Correct. That's exactly my point. There was no question, because that's the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up, and he was perhaps modeling how we're supposed to act. So, I mean, I remember when I was in Ner Yisrael, right? Aaron will appreciate this. When I was in Ner Yisrael, so Rabbi Herman Neuberger, Rabbi Naftali Neuberger, who was the president, you know, of Ner Yisrael for many, many years, and really built it up to be the yeshiva that it is today, was very old. He was an older man. So he was around, but he wasn't so active anymore. And his son, Rav Sheftel Neuberger, who at that, you know, was no young man himself at the time. I mean, his father was probably in his 80s, and maybe he was in his 60s, or whatever the case was. But he was, you know, he was already training with his father, you know, how to lead the institution, how to be the president of a big yeshiva, and how to build it up. And he learned, you know, everything from his father. And when his father passed away, I was in yeshiva, when his father passed away, you know, Baruch Hashem, the transition was seamless. It was seamless. Because he had been there, you know, throughout his father's tenure. He had learned everything from his father, you know, and it was clear who was going to be the next president of the yeshiva. It wasn't a question, who should take over, are they going to change things? It was very clear who was going to be the one, and he was going to take over in the same way that his father did, and everything, and look, Baruch Hashem, everything was smooth, and there were no issues. And that's, I think that's the model of the Moshe and Yehoshua. Kadosh Baruch Hu set this up. He was teaching us. That's the model that there has to be, you know, so this was something that was a little bit lacking here.
Wasn't it common that the king would choose his successor, but his son?
Yes.
So how come in the case of Gideon that didn't happen?
Because he didn't see himself as the king. He saw himself as a general. He was helping out. He was really a farmer, you know. So he stepped up when they needed help, you know. And they came to him at the end. They said, "We want you to rule over us, right?" That was Parakas. "We want you to rule over us. We want your sons and your grandsons." And he said, "No, you know, no, don't worry about it. Just serve Hashem. Everything will be good." You know, but that's not really, it didn't turn out that way. You know, it didn't turn out that way. Okay. Pasuk Gimel. Vayidabru achei imo alav ba'oznei kol ba'alei Shechem. So his family, you know, Avimelech's family said, "Hey, you know, not a bad idea. You know what Avimelech is suggesting, that he should be the king, you know, instead of the 70 brothers? Not a bad idea." So they go on his behalf, and they talk to the city, the people of Shechem. And they discussed the whole situation. They said, "Listen, he's got 70 sons. How are we going to choose which of the 70 sons should take over after his death? Instead, why don't we appoint Avimelech? He's Mishpacha, right? He's different than the other 70. He has something that distinguishes him. He's got a different mother. And that's going to be, I think that's the best way to go." And in the end of the day, the family, right, the blood relation, that's what won the day. And that's people's hearts were in favor of Avimelech. Now, it's interesting, the Malbim points out that in the end, that's important to focus on at the end of the Pasuk. Right? Why did they agree upon Avimelech? Not because he was the best. Not because he was better for the nation. Not because they promised Gidon that he and his sons and his grandsons will lead, which they did back in Pasuk Chaf Beis of Perek Ches. Not because of any of that, but only because of their closeness. Only because of that familial connection, the blood relation. That's why they chose him. In the end, it's not going to turn out well, we'll see. Right? But that's why they chose him. It's you know, you have to be careful. Because, listen, everybody wants to take care of their family. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu himself, going back to that story, Moshe Rabbeinu himself wanted to take care of his family. Right? What did he want to do? He wanted his sons to take over. And what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say?
No.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, "That's not what's best for Klal Yisrael. Your sons, they're great people, they were tzaddikim, that's not what's best for Klal Yisrael. Yehoshua is the leader that's best for Klal Yisrael." And that's a tough thing. Right? That's a tough thing for a father to hear, who wants to take care of his sons, he wants his sons to have good jobs, right? He wants them to. But, you know, listen, how many businesses do we know that were run to the ground by the kids who took over after the father passed away, right? Or after the father retired, ran it straight into the ground. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want that to happen to Klal Yisrael. He doesn't want the kids running Klal Yisrael into the ground. the way we have to decide on our leaders is which leaders are best for the people, which leaders are best for Klal Yisrael. Now, there is something to the fact that a person's sons take priority. There is something to that, assuming that they are ro'i l'kach, assuming that they can do it, that they can do a good job. And if they can do a good job and others can do a good job, they have priority. But if they're not going to do as good of a job and someone else is going to do a much better job, and especially in the case of Klal Yisrael, and that's what you need, now the Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying, that's what we have to do.
We only mentioned Avi Melech out of all the seven.
Right.
69
Correct.
Only Melech.
So we're going to learn about one more.
Well, we'll
yeah.
See that.
Then why? What do you mean?
Not saying because here he is, Abimelech, the only one that's mentioned out of all the other 69.
Yeah, but that's because he wanted it. He was trying to bulldoze his way in. Right? Yeah.
Rabbi,
yeah.
In all the cases, Hashem, Yeshua, he appointed the proper king.
Right.
Why in this case didn't he?
Well, I mean, Hashem really only appointed Yeshua. Think about it. After Yeshua, Hashem left it up to the people to do it. Right? Hashem appointed Moshe Rabbeinu, that was clear at the Sneh. He was the one who appointed Moshe as the next leader. And then Hashem appointed Yehoshua. But after that, he wanted Bnei Yisrael to take care of it. And you guys have to take charge of your destiny. Remember, in Mitzrayim, they were slaves. Right? They weren't really in a place where they could choose their leader successfully. You know, they were downtrodden, they were persecuted, they were oppressed. They weren't in a good place. And even in the Midbar, right? You know, okay, so maybe they were in better shape in the Midbar than they were in Mitzrayim. But still, you know, they didn't have a homeland. They weren't settled. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm still going to help you out. Right? It's like, the kids are just getting married. They're getting settled. The parents helped them out a little bit to get them on their feet. Once Klal Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael, they're on their feet. They have to build up the land. They have to conquer the land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, now it's your turn. Now it's your job. Right? You have to be independent. You have to be able to do this yourself. Sometimes they were successful, and sometimes they messed up. You know what I mean? But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not going to hold your hand your whole life. You know? The Midbar was Nisim. The Man, the Be'er, everything was miraculous. HaKadosh Baruch Hu held their hand. Came to Eretz Yisrael, now you guys are on your own. I'll be here for you. I'm going to be here to protect you. Right? I'm not going anywhere. But I'm going to be watching from behind because I want you to work the land. I want you to conquer the land. I want you to set up the government. I want you guys to figure this out on your own. Unlike any good parent. Right? The good parent, the parent never leaves their kids and just walks away and turns their back. Chas v'shalom. But they say, listen, I want to see if you can do it on your own. I'm going to be here if you need me, right? But I want to see you try to do it on your own. And that's what's happening here. Pasuk Dalet. Vayitnu lo shivim kesef mi beis bal bris. So they give him some money. You know, every king needs money, right? Needs money to run his kingdom. So they give Avimelech shivim kesef. They give him 70 silver coins. From the treasury from Baal Bris, Vayiskor Bohem Avimelech. So what does Avimelech do? He's got to hire an army. He's a king. He needs an army, right? So he hires an army. Now who does he hire? Anashim Reikim Upochazim Vayilchu Acharav. Not great people, right? Reikim, they're empty people. Right? He hires empty people. You know, maybe he went to the bars and he said, okay, who needs a job? You know, and that's who he's hiring. Reikim Pochazim. Poch has in different interpretations what it means, but Rashi says that they act quickly without thinking. They're very impulsive people. You know, they were empty and impulsive people. The Radak says that they were low lives. You know, they didn't have jobs. So whatever, you know, they were quick to any new job. They were quick to, yeah, I'll do it, right? Because they needed a livelihood, these people. They didn't have any jobs.
That's
so,
this is his army.
Yeah, this is his army.
They were worthless and unstable.
Worthless and unstable. That's the translation. What?
That army today of people, throwaways.
Yeah, whatever. The it's interesting. The Targum Yonasan translates Pochazim as Bikarim. Beis Kuf Reish Yud Mem. Bikarim. So either that means that they were cattle herders, like Bakar. The cattle herders were not known as the upper echelons of society. Okay, or it might be like the word hefker, right? Like hefker is usually with a fe, but sometimes it's spelled with a vase, and hefker means like ownerless. You know, they were like lawless. Like that's the type of people that they were. Okay, and that's who we hired. Now you see what's going on here. This guy's bulldozing his way into power, and he's hiring an army of people that are low lives, lawless, ruthless. You know, this is not going to end well. Okay. Now, the Malbim makes a fascinating point here. The Malbim says that, you know, the people of Shechem gave him the funds, right? And then he hired these people. Now, we're going to see that that these people end up doing some terrible things, and they end up murdering a lot of people. Okay? That's going to be the next pasuk. Okay? Let's read it now, pasuk hey, and then we'll come back to this point. Vayavobe saviv efrasa. So he comes with this army of people, right, these low lives, this lawless group. He comes back to his father's home in Ophras, not Ephras, but Ophras. Vayarog es echav b'nei Yerubal shivim ish al even echas. And he murders all 70 of his brothers. He murders all 70 of his brothers, al even echas, at one time, right, one place. Boom. He kills them all. Vayivasa Yosem ben Yerubal akotam ki nechva.
One person did this?
Well, one person with his army. He had a whole posse now. Right, of these lawless people. So, you know, this was good fun for them probably, right? These lawless people. So he went and he murdered all 70 of his brothers. Why did he do that? Well, that's a very easy way of cementing his leadership. Got rid of all the competition. Right? Because everybody loved Gideon. So people figured one of Gideon's sons is going to take over. Well, there's 71 of us. Well, if I kill 70, then there's only one. Right? That's what he was thinking. So this is his treacherous rise to power. Okay, Abimelech murders his 70 brothers with this chevra. One brother escapes. Yosam. Right? Yosam ben Yerubal. One son, Hakatan, the pasuk calls him. I don't know if he was the youngest. He was definitely one of the younger ones. Maybe the youngest. And he hid. He hid. And therefore they didn't find him. And he was able to escape. And we'll see that he plays a role in the follow-up here. Okay, so he murders all 70 of his brothers with the exception of one, so really 69 of them. The Radak points out that very often in Tanakh, we round up, right? Because in the end, he did not murder 70, he murdered 69. But he says we always round up in Tanakh. Like, how many lashes does a person get for violating a losa say? 39. What does it say in the Torah? 40. Right? So we round up. When it's minus one, we often round up in the Torah. Okay, now the Malbim points out that, you know, Pasuk Dalet is important because who gave him the funds for this operation? The people of Shechem. The people of Shechem were the ones who funded his army, who then went and murdered the 70 people, right? So, says the Malbim, they're accomplices in the crime. They're accomplices. If they funded, right, even though they didn't touch anyone, they didn't murder anyone, but if you fund the murderers, then you have a hand in the murder. Yeah.
They have authority to hire him in the first place.
I mean, listen, they had authority to hire.
They took it upon themselves to do it that way.
Well, presumably they didn't have any authority to hire him as the, or to appoint him as the king over all of Klal Yisrael, because this is one city, there's a Shem. Now they can appoint him as a local leader, right? They have the right to appoint him as a local leader, but he wanted more than that. You know, he wanted to be the king. But I guess he figured, let me go one city at a time. So if I can get Shechem under my belt, you know, and kill out the competition, so then I'll have a better case to rise to power over the rest of Klal Yisrael, perhaps. But just this point is so important, because we recognize this, you know, today. And we always talk about, different countries, Iran, the funding terror. You know, we recognize that if you pay for terrorists, that means you're also terrorists. Right? We recognize that, but the world doesn't always recognize that. The world sometimes looks and says, okay, well, these guys are terrorists, they're blowing people up, they're killing people, you know. This government, well, I don't see anybody doing anything wrong. Meanwhile, where are they getting all their money from? Right? Who's buying all the rockets? Who's paying for all the rockets that are being fired into Eretz Yisrael? Right? Who's paying for all the ammunition, the guns and the bullets that are being used to kill Israeli soldiers? So we know who's paying for it, and we say, just like they're terrorists, you guys are terrorists. But a lot of people in the world don't see that. They have a disconnect. But it's important. That's the Malbim says. You can't disconnect. If the people of Shechem funded this army, this treacherous army, that means they have a hand in the murder of all 70 brothers. They have a hand in that murder. And that's important. You know, we have to be careful where we put our money. But when we're accomplices to something, that's exactly what we are. We're an accomplice to the crime. You know, whether
they Israel knew they were accomplices.
Well, they may not have known exactly what Avimelech was going to do with these guys, but in the end of the day, you have to be careful,
Well, they found out from the
love. They sure did.
And they didn't do anything bad.
Well, at this point, what are they going to do? I mean, I guess, you know, they could have taken him to justice, but, you know, he may not be the person that you want to mess with right now. Pasuk Vav. Vayeyasfu. Vayeyasfu. Kol ba'alei Shechem v'chol beis Milo. So all of the people of Shechem and the people of Beis Milo. Beis Milo was another town that was nearby, another city. Vayelchu v'yam lichu v'zavi melech. Lemelech. They appointed him as king. Right? He just got, you know, they appointed him as king. Im Elon Mutzav Asher v'Shechem. Elon Mutzav is the name of a place. There was a certain plain. There was a stone nearby that was known as like the plain of this stone. Elon Mutzav. And that was the location where they appointed him, they coronated him as their king. Pasuk Zayin, Vayagidu leYosam. So Yosam, remember Yosam was this Yotam. It's still I believe it's still an Israeli name, right? Based on this individual Yotam. So Yosam was was the one. He was the kid who hid, and he was spared, not spared, but he escaped. Vayelech vayamod berosh har grizim. He goes up and he stands up on Har Grizim. Har Grizim we know from the Torah. Har Grizim and Har Eval. Har Grizim is the place of the brachos. Vayisa kolo vayikra. And he calls out from the top of Har Grizim. Vayomer lohem, and he says to them, Shimu elai ba'al eshchem, v'yishma aleichem elokim. Listen to me, people of Shechem. Listen to me. And if you listen to me, Hashem will reward you, says the Metzudas David, and he will listen to your prayers. Okay, so he's trying to convince them to listen to him. He's got to convince them somehow. So he says, Hashem's going to reward you for listening to me. Okay, that piques their interest. They want to hear what he has to say. The Malbim says also that when he says, V'yishma aleichem Elokim, he's saying that also God, Elokim, is the Midas Adin. It's the attribute of judgment, justice, right? So he said, Hashem is going to judge between us. And he listened to me. You have to hear me out here. And if you don't hear me out, Hashem is going to be the judge. Hashem is going to judge between us. And listen to what he says. He now paints a picture, and he gives a mashal, a parable, and he tries to explain the situation to them with this mashal, very intricate mashal here. Pasuk Ches. Halo holchu ha'etzim limshoach aleihem melech. He says, imagine, the trees of the forest are all coming to appoint a king over them. Obviously, this is a mashal, this is a parable. Vayomru lazayas. So who do they turn to first? They turn to the olive tree. And they tell the olive tree, Malcha Aleinu, be king over us. That's what they tell the olive tree. Okay? Let's read the olive tree's response, and then we'll see some of the explanation here. Pasuk Tes is the olive's response. Vayomer lohem hazayis. So the olive tree responds, Hechadalti es dishni. Is my produce finished? Is it consumed? I should be yechabdu elokim va'anoshim. With my produce, I give honor to God, I give honor to people. Should I abandon all of that and go deal with the other trees? Be the king over the other trees? So this is the mashal. So what's the idea here? So it's interesting. Rashi points out that who was the first shofet? Osniel ben Kenaz. He was the first shofet. So Rashi says that this pasuk is referring to Osniel. That they went to Osniel ben Kenaz. Osniel ben Kenaz, descended from Shevet Yehuda, and Rashi quotes a pasuk in Tanakh, and Chazal learned from that pasuk that it's referring to Shevet Yehuda as a Zayas, that the Zayas is actually a reference to Shevet Yehuda. Okay, but listen to this though. Yeah. Pinchas. Yeah. Before Osniel. He was the Navi, though, is he? He was a Navi. I don't think he was a Shofet. I think he was a Navi. We discussed him as a Navi, I think. Well, I'll have to look back. Okay. So the Al-Sheikh points out here, and he says that there are three reasons why people would appoint a specific king. Three reasons why people would choose. I mean, the reason to appoint a king is you need a leader. But there are three reasons why people would choose one particular person to be their king. Number one, if let's say the person is a famous person, he's a chashuv person, so then it's an honor for the people to have him as their king. right? It's an honor to have, you want a leader who that people, it's a people of name recognition, right? People know the name. You tell people, this is my king. They're, he's your king, right? He's your king, okay? So number one is it's honorable for you if you have somebody chashav, if you have somebody significant in that position, okay? He says that's the nimshal from the zayas, because the zayas is one of the most chashav trees, right? Why? Because the zayas provides olives. Olives provide olive oil. From olives you make olive oil, which gives light, right? Acts as a fuel. You can use it for food. So the olive tree is one of the most chashav trees. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is that you might pick a particular king because you're going to benefit from that king. So let's say the king is very successful in war. He's going to come back with a lot of spoils from war, right? It's going to be good for the kingdom. That'll be good for the people. It's going to spill over to the people, hopefully, right? You know, they'll get some of that money. They'll get some of those spoils. So that's the second reason why they might choose an individual as king, because they're going to personally benefit from his victories. The third is that they might choose a particular person because they feel secure that he's going to protect them. And they want to live in peace and serenity, security. So therefore they choose this person as king because he's going to protect them, he's going to take care of them, and they won't have to worry too much about things. So says the Al-Sheikh, and let's read it through, and then we'll come back and maybe discuss the Malbim's interpretation. So the Al-Sheikh says that the Zayas was that first type. The Zayas was the Chashuv king, right? So they came first to the Chashuv king, the Chashuv person. They said, we want you to be king over us. It would be an honor for us to have you. You're so Chashuv, the Zayas, the olive tree. You're so Chashuv, it would be an honor for us to have you as the king. What does the Zayas respond? So according to the Al-Sheikh, the Zayas responds, Hechadalti es dishni. He says, my fruit is not on the tree all year. Right? The olive tree produces fruit, of course. But there's a large chunk of the year where there is no fruit on the olive tree. Right? Where the olive tree is barren. Right? It's not the time of harvest. And therefore he says, I don't feel that I'm honorable enough to take charge over all of the other trees, to be the king over all of the other trees. So what do they go in Pasuk Yud? Okay? Pasuk Yud says, before we do that, it's also just interesting in the Zayas. So what does it say? Bi'echabdu Elokim va'anashim. Right, that the honor is going to with me, God and man is honored. So how are God and man honored with olives and with oil? So the Radak says that how does oil honor God? Because oil is used in the Menachos and the Beis Hamikdash. So the Korban Mincha, right, the flour offerings were brought with oil. So that was used, that was the way that the oil honored God. You could also say, how did the oil bring honor to God? Some of Farshim say because oil was used to light the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Right, so the oil for the menachos, the oil for the menorah. What about people? So you could say that it honors people because they can use it in their food. That's what the Radak says. The Mitzudas David says it also brings honor to people because Kohanim and Melachim and kings were both anointed with olive oil, right? So olive oil plays a very important role, very significant role in bringing honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash, to human beings, right? That's the olive oil, okay? So let's see Pasuk Yud. So the olive tree refuses. He says, I'm not interested. Comes Pasuk Yud and says, Vayomru Ha'etzim La'Te'ena. So they turn to the fig tree. They turn to the fig tree, and they say to the fig tree, "L'chi'at molchi aleinu." Please, you go and serve over us. Okay. So says the Al-Sheikh, the fig tree is the second type of leader. Why? Fig tree is not so chashuv. Figs are not as chashuv as olives. They don't produce oil, right? But the fig represents the benefit to the people, just like the king that brings benefit to his people, spoils of war. So to hear the fig provides benefit. Figs are delicious. Figs are tasty. The fig tree provides figs for people to eat. Very tasty, delicious figs for people to eat. Pasuk Yud Aleph. And then again, we'll come back and we'll see another interpretation. V'atomer lohem ha-te'ena. So the te'ena says, the fig tree responds. A similar response. Hechadalti es muski. I don't have my sweetness all year, says the Al-Sheikh. Right? My sweetness doesn't last all year. You harvest the figs, and then for a large part of the year, I'm figless. Tova. I don't have my bounty, my good bounty. I should go and rule over the other trees. No, I'm not fit for that. So let's see the next pasuk. Pasuk Yudbeis, and again we'll come back and we'll talk about all of this. Vayomru ha'etzim la'gefen. So the etzim come to the vine, the grapevine, and they say to the grapevine, l'chi'at mo'chi aleinu. Please, you rule over us. Okay, and says the Alshech, they couldn't find someone who was chashav. Zayas refused. They couldn't find someone who gave benefit that the ta'ena refused. So they came to the Geffen. The Geffen, right? Geffen is grapes. Grapes make wine. And wine makes people happy. Wine makes people satisfied and happy. So they went to that third type of king who would allow the people to live with peace and security and happiness. Right? That feeling that a person gets when they drink wine, the feeling of happiness and security and serenity. That's what they'll bring. But he too, the Geffen also refused. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Va'atomer lohem ha'gefen, Echadalti es tiroshi ha'mesameach elokim va'anoshim, Ve'halachti lanu ala etzim. Right, so the Asha says also, my simcha is not consistent. It's not consistent. So I also can't do it. So finally, what do? They come to the final option. They're out of options. They don't have the king that's going to be chashav. They don't have the king that's going to provide them with benefit. They don't have the king that's going to provide them with the security. They have nothing. Pasuk Yudal vayomru kol ha'etzim el ha'atad. So they turn to the thorns. Leich atah melach aleinu. You rule over us. Says the Alshech, the thorns have none of these benefits. Nothing. Thorns are not chashav. Thorns don't provide any fruit. Thorns don't provide anybody with peace and security. Pasuk Tezvav. Who's the thorn? Avimelech. The thorn refers to Avimelech. Vayomer ha'atad el ha'etzim. Im be'emes atem moshchim osi l'melech aleichem. If you really want me to be the king, bo'u chasu b'tzili. Come, hide, rest in my shade. V'im ayin, but if you really don't want to, teitzei eish min ha'atad v'atochal es arzei halvanum. Then fire is going to come out of these thorns and consume the great cedars of Levanu. Fire is going to come out. He seems like he's almost mocking them. Right, he seems like he's mocking them a little bit. So that's how the Alshech understands this whole story here. Now the Malbim has a little bit of a different interpretation. The Malbim says, first of all, trees are used as a mushal for people. Right, we know the pasuk says ki ha'adam eitz hasada, right, and many of the mefarshim say that it's a reference that trees are a mushal for people in many different ways. Okay, says the Malbim at the beginning. Who were the ones who tried to find the king? Pasuk, go back to Pasuk Ches for a minute. Halo chalchu ha'etzim. All of the trees went. They didn't send the chashav delegation. They sent all of the trees. Right? The regular trees, the pasha trees. Right? In fact, most trees in the world are not fruit-bearing. So the Mefarshim understand that the fruit-bearing trees are more chashav, and the barren trees, the ones that don't produce fruit, are less chashav. That's like the hamonam. Those are the masses. So come the Malbim, and the Malbim says, how do people make decisions in life? They make decisions based on the following three possibilities. Some people decide, they make decisions based on what is tov, what they know intellectually to be good for them. That's how some people make decisions. Others make decisions based on what's arev, based on what's pleasing to them. They don't make decisions based on what they know to be good. They make decisions based on what they know will bring them pleasure. The things that they know will bring them pleasure will make them enjoy themselves. And others, which is probably most of us, make decisions based on what is, says the Malbim, mo'il. It's a combination. Something that's good, that will help, it's beneficial, but it's also good for me. It's also not so terrible for me. It's a little bit of a compromise. So he says that at first, the Chachamim, who are making this selection, he says that most people, they can't choose a king. They can't choose a melech. You can't ask the peasants in the countryside to choose a king for themselves. Right? This wasn't a democracy. Okay? So he says, who has to choose the king? The chachamim. The people who really know how to make wise decisions. They need to be the ones to choose the king. So they nominate the Zayas. The Zayas is tov. The Zayas is good. Intellectually, the Zayas is good. Why? Zayas is oil. Provides light. What does that represent? Torah. Wisdom. Enlightenment. So they know what's good. So the Chachamim appoint the Zayas. You should be the one to lead us. Torah should be the one. The goal should always be the Tov. The goal should always be the Torah. That's what they want to do. The Malbim says, the next pasuk, what does the Zayas say? I can't do it. Not the way the Ashuk understands. The Malbim says, I can't leave. I'm involved in so many good pursuits. I'm involved in my Torah learning. I can't leave that and go rule the people. Right? You know, this reminds me there, and we've discussed this in the past. There are some Gedolei Torah, some Gedolim, that are very involved in politics and leading people, and there are some Gedolim that say, leave that to others. I just want to sit and learn. I just want to sit and learn. Right? We discussed with Chaim Kanievsky, right, until he demands, you know, should live and be well, demands in his 90s. He just recently, literally in his 90s, became a leader of the Jewish people. Just recently. Until then, there were other people. He said, go to Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, go to this Gedol. Right? He didn't involve himself in politics at all. He just sat and learned all day. He spoke to people. He helped people that needed help. But politics, you know, big things, not involved. He didn't want to be involved. Yeah, let me sit and learn. That's what I do best. You know, leave the politics to the other Gedolim. Now he has no choice because he's the biggest. So now he's forced to get involved in his 90s. He's now schlepped in. Right? But that's what the Zayi says. I don't want to be involved in dealing with people and politics and problems. I want to be involved in wisdom. I want to be involved in chokhmah. That's what I want to be involved in. So instead, what do? They go to the Te'ena. The Malbim says, the Chachamim were unsuccessful. They weren't able to appoint the king. So what do? The wealthy people take over now. So the wealthy people, they're not going to choose based on what's tov, based on what intellectually they know is good for them. The wealthy people choose what's arev, what's pleasing, right? What's pleasurable in life. That's what they're looking for. So they go to the Te'ena. The Te'ena represents what's pleasing, what's pleasant, what's pleasurable in life. Okay? And then he says that's the language of L'chi'at. L'chi'at means, listen, we know you're not really fit to be the king, but, you know, do us a favor. We'll help you out. We'll fund you. You know, you can do it. Because they know that it's going to be pleasant for them. It's going to be pleasing for them. The Te'ena says, I'm too involved in my pleasures of life. I don't want to get involved in politics. I don't want to get involved in people and problems. I'm too involved in the pleasures of life. That's what I'm happy. Leave me alone. So then they go to the Te'ena. I'm sorry, they go to the Geffen. The Geffen, says the Malbim, represents the Mo'il. The Geffen represents the combination of the two. Because on the one hand, the Geffen represents spiritual things. We use wine for Kiddush and Koshel Bracha. The Geffen does represent spiritual things, but the Geffen also represents joy and happiness. And we know that people who drink wine and do it in a proper way, it benefits them, it's good for them. People who drink wine in an improper way, the foolish people, then they get drunk and then they do all sorts of silly and stupid things, right? So that's the Geffen. But the Geffen said also, the Geffen says, I can't do it. I don't want to abandon. I have my midos that I focus on, and I can't abandon all these things to just deal with the people. And then finally, you end up with who? You end up with the thorns. Right, you end up with the thorns. And says the Malbim, the wise men struck out, the Chachamim struck out, the wealthy people struck out, and now you're left with the Hamonam, you're left with the peasants and the people. Who do they choose? They choose just the thorns. They choose the guy who has nothing to offer, nothing, no benefit, and that's Avimelech. And Avimelech, we saw already, led to some bloodshed. And Mirtz Hashem, we'll see next week, we'll continue with Perek Tes, leads to more problems throughout Klal Yisrael. Oh, that's true. We're not going to have a shiur next week because it's Rosh Hashanah. Okay, we'll wait for the weekend.